Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Theater Podcast, intimate personal conversations with theater's biggest names. I am your host, Alan Seals, and this episode is with Cody Renard Richard, who is this podcast's first stage manager. Several people have written in and asked for me to interview a stage manager, and man, Cody has an amazing story. We cover all of like what a stage manager does, how he got into it and everything, but he started out growing up as a kid living on a horse farm in Texas. That's what his family does. And then he made his way to New York City after going to college in St. Louis. But he went to college for stage management, not thinking he'd make a career out of it, which is just really awesome in my opinion. And his attitude is incredible. He tells a story of how he finally got into managing, being a production stage manager, not just an assistant stage manager, but a PSM on Broadway. And he just never let a negative response stop him. He kept going. He kept emailing. He kept calling. He made friends somehow with Lin-Manuel Miranda, Chris Jackson, the original guys from Freestyle Love Supreme. And now, you know, like 18 years ago, and now he's the PSM for Freestyle Love Supreme. He even was the stage manager this year for the VMA Awards and the actual 2019 Tony Awards. So, man, I just can't wait for you to hear this. Again, as always, before you dive in, please visit me online at ttp.fm and show your support. Every episode, there's a question or two that's asked by patrons, and at a certain level, you get to submit your own questions, and I can include them in the interview. So check that out online at ttp.fm/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And now, everyone, please enjoy this episode with Cody Renard Richard.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Here you go. One, two, three.
His guest today has been behind the scenes ensuring that many of your favorite shows, from The Lion King to Dear Evan Hansen to Hamilton, happen exactly as they should, show after show after show and night after night. He's even worked on some of the last few years' live theater events, such as Hairspray Live, The Wiz Live, Jesus Christ Superstar Live, and he's currently the production stage manager for one of Broadway's newest hits, Freestyle Love Supreme. Cody Renard Richard, welcome to the Theater Podcast.
What an intro. Thank you.
When you put it all together like that, yeah, it feels good.
It does.
So you're actually my first stage manager.
Oh, really?
Yep. Popping my stage manager chair on the podcast.
Happy to do it.
So I have so many questions. I think this is going to be an interesting story, but I want to start where I do with everybody on the podcast and tell me about your childhood. Tell me about where you grew up.
I am from Hockley, Texas, which is right outside of Houston, Texas. I usually say Houston. People don't really know what Hockley is. I grew up on a ranch. My entire family raises horses, and they're cowboys and cowgirls.
No
so that
kidding.
Was my that was my upbringing. I got into theater around high school, and then I went to college for it in St. Louis, and then eventually moved here. And then things started happening.
All right, so you glossed over the high school thing. But so in high school, I mean, Texas is
very competitive in the arts.
Right.
And in everything, but yeah.
Bigger, everything's bigger in Texas.
Absolutely.
Even the competition.
Well, there you go. yeah, so I started off, I kind of fell into theater. I had to pick up an extracurricular when I was in high school, and I just started doing drama, as we call it. And I was acting, as most kids do, because that's what we know. And then my high school theater director actually told me I should stage manage one of the shows, and I had no idea what it meant. But in my mind, I was like, oh, I get to be in charge. I was like, sure. and then she told me, she said I had a way of making people listen to them without yelling. And she's like, that's going to take you far. And at the time, I had no idea what it meant. But I was like, sure, I'll do this thing. And then that kind of just fell into my groove of stage managing, I guess. I did one show, and I liked being the person that everyone came to, and then I just continued to do it throughout the rest of my time in high school.
Hmm. Okay, so at what point in high school then were you thinking, this is it, this is what I want my career to be?
Well, I didn't necessarily know of it as a career, because it was kind of unheard of in Texas. And no one else before me had done it as a career. But it was just something that I enjoyed doing. And I wanted to leave Texas for college. So so I was like, oh, I'm doing this thing now. And then I started applying for schools that had stage management programs. And it wasn't until I got into one, I was like, oh, this can actually be a career. So it was well into my my college years that I realized that this could be something long term.
Oh, that's strange to me. So you went to college for something that you didn't necessarily think at the time you wanted to make a career out of.
Yeah, I wanted to work in the theater, and I didn't know what it was going to be yet. But I majored in stage management because it's what I was doing, and I knew that it was something that I thought I knew what it was, and then I finally realized and got more experience and learned more about it throughout college, and then kind of made up my mind to pursue that a little more. Because also, you know, when you're 18, you're so impressionable. Right. So no one really, you don't really know what you want to do. You know, so I was like,
39, oh, I still don't know
exactly,
what I
want to do. Exactly. So I was like, I can do this thing because apparently people tell me I'm good at it. And then, you know, and then I just kind of saw it through.
All right. So graduated with a degree in stage management. And I guess, all right. So I know what various like acting curriculums are and dance curriculums, and there's singing curriculums depending on what school you're going to. But tell me about a stage management curriculum. Is it just like, how do they test you? How do they throw monkey wrenches in your situations?
Well,
and like your final exams is like, oh no, our opening actor isn't here for opening. What do we do?
I mean, it varies. The college that I went to Webster Conservatory, and our program was very loose in structure. We got most of our experience by working and just by learning through doing. We weren't taught by a book. We had a seminar class where it was like an open forum where we would sit down and we would talk about the shows that we're working on. And then we would problem solve within that class. And then we would take that out and apply it to what we were working on and just life. So there really wasn't... we didn't read a book. You weren't taught, like, you take blocking this way or you have to talk to someone this way, which I think was really incredible because you end up learning from your peers. You learn from professional stage managers, and you kind of just pick what works best for your style and who you are, which I think is a valuable life lesson, too, because you can just be yourself within the job instead of trying to be a mold of what someone says stage management should be, which was interesting. You know, I know a lot of other programs where you do read books and you have to take, you know, you have to do certain things the way the professor is taught, that was taught, you know what I mean? But our program, it was kind of, not a free-for-all, but it was definitely loose in structure with books and final exams. And we would get graded on the type of work that we did on the shows, because our professor was a dean of the college, actually, but he was also very hands-on. So he would be with us in tech, and he would watch us, you know, throughout the rehearsal process, and then he would guide us through that. And it's kind of how we succeeded in those moments was kind of our grading process, I guess.
Okay, so we said Webster Conservatory. Is that around here?
It's in St. Louis.
St. Louis, okay. St. Louis, are there I don't know much about Webster. Is there a big acting contingent there too?
So there is.
So you have people there that are there for performing that are students, and then all of the crew, like costumes and set design and everything.
So Webster Conservatory is on the campus. The Repertory Theater of St. Louis is on the campus of Webster Conservatory. So there's also a professional theater that's in partnership with the conservatory.
So we
produce our own shows. There are, you know, however many musical theater majors, and there's also acting majors, and then there's the design tech and stage management classes that we all work together and do shows. But we also get the opportunity to work with professional actors, so we and designers who come in and stage managers who are there to kind of gain that knowledge as well, which is kind of, you don't do it on your earlier shows, but you do it like your junior and senior years, and then you come back and you apply that to like your final show that you're doing there. The school is also pretty big on musical theater and acting, so it's great to work with a conservatory that's all-encompassing that has, you know, all these other programs.
It feels like everybody's in it together, too.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, that's fun. Okay, so then graduation, and when did you become New York bound?
I knew very early on that I wanted to move to New York. It was my freshman year spring break. No, sophomore year fall break, I came to New York. It was my first time coming to New York, and I was obsessed, especially coming from a small town in Texas. I've never been in a city quite like this.
There's not a lot of horses around here.
There's none. I mean, well, there's the few cops, but we're not talking about that. it was mind-blowing, and I think I saw like 7 Broadway shows within like 5 days because I was obsessed.
Right.
And I went back to school, and I had this bug, and I was like, oh my God, and I just kept thinking about New York, and I just became very obsessed about what New York was. And then throughout my years in college, I was like, okay, I was very oriented on figuring out how to move here and just start working. So I knew very young I wanted to move here. And then my senior year, I got my equity card in St. Louis, and then I moved here in October. Yeah, the fall after I graduated.
So Actors Equity covers, the union covers crew and stage management.
It covers actors and stage managers. It doesn't cover company managers or any of the other crews.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're part of Equity, and you have all those benefits. Okay. And yeah, I was wondering about the adult side of that.
Yeah.
You know, adulting is hard.
Right.
It's nice to
exactly.
Equity helps you out.
Helps you out
a little bit. Okay. So moved to New York. So what? How long ago did you move to New York?
It's 9 years this year. I moved here in 2010.
Wow. Okay. So then,
it's been a while. It doesn't feel like it, but then again, it does.
So I'm fascinated by this because I don't, like I said, I don't talk to many stage managers. But in your intro, there was like multiple nationally live TV shows and some of the biggest shows on Broadway still: Lion King, Dear Evan Hansen, Hamilton. And in your state, you're working with this ASMing, assistant stage managing some of them, and now you're stage managing your PSM?
Okay. Production stage manager.
Yeah, PSM and ASM. So you're working on all these other shows. How, I guess, is it like paying your dues? How do you get in? What's the foot in the door?
I mean, there are many a ways to get in, and there's never a right answer, and everybody's journey is very different. I fortunately moved here with a job. It wasn't connected to Broadway, but I moved here with a job that was well-paying. Years ago, I was an intern at the Alley Theater, and there was a stage manager who was working there. And she went off to work for Cirque du Soleil, and then I had come here to do an internship, and I was posting about it on Facebook. And I went back to school, and she thought I was still living here. So she called me, and she said, hey, I'm coming to New York with this show. Are you still around? I want you to assist me. And of course, I lied. I was still in St. Louis. I was like, yeah, I'm still in New York.
Of course, I'll be there tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah. Which actually, I had to move here in 2 weeks because the show started in 2 weeks.
About Paramore, right?
No, this was Windtuck at Madison Square Garden.
Oh.
Back in, 2000? Yeah, 2010. So I moved here and I was working for Cirque du Soleil, which was insane, especially being like my first real job in New York. It was crazy. It was mind-opening. I learned a lot. And then the show closed because it was a limited run. It was a holiday show. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a job. I didn't know how to get a job because I'm 22, 21 in New York City. Don't really have connections, just here trying to work, you know. And being from St. Louis, I'm not from St. Louis, but going to school in St. Louis, you're not really taught how to find a job in New York City, because New York City is very different than the regional market or like the St. Louis market or the Houston market. So I got on Playbill and I just started looking at people who were looking for assistants or PAs. And of course, I didn't hear back from any of them because people get emails all the time. And then I found this, the Transport Group was doing this show called Hello Again, and there was a bunch of Broadway actors in it. And I was like, oh, I should just work on that so I can meet these people. So I reached out to the artistic director of the Transport Group, and I was like, hey, I don't know if you need a PA or an assistant. I would love to work on the show. I didn't know him, but he was very nice, Jack Cummings. And he wrote me back and he was like, we don't have any stage management openings, but if you're willing to PA, we can pay you a Metro card and you can observe and be around, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, absolutely, absolutely, you know. And at that time, I don't know how long the company has been going, was open then, but, you know, they couldn't afford to add on more people, right, which I get. And it's New York and it's off Broadway, so, you know. So I was like, absolutely, I just want to be in the room with these people. And just hoping that, you know, like, just being... I find that, like, you know, when you surround yourself with certain people who are doing things, it will come back to you in some way because mm-hmm. you're orbiting around that energy. So I was like, I have to be in this room. So I got the show and I was in there, and it was great and it was terrible and it was great. And you know what I mean? Just because the, I don't know. Anyway, it was a wonderful experience overall. And that led to the next thing, which was Lysistrata Jones, this Transport Group, was also mm-hmm. producing. And I PA'd that for a MetroCard for a couple of months. And they announced that show was moving to Broadway. And in my mind, I was like, great, we're going to Broadway. Because, you know, I've been working on the show and all the cast is going. So I was like, of course, right? But no, that what happened was the show moved to Broadway and they hired a new stage management team. They wanted people with more experience and people who had worked on Broadway. And it was totally understandable. But at the time, I didn't get it. I was my second show in New York. You know, I just figured I would go with it, you know. So I was determined to stay with the show. So I wrote the director and I wrote the associate choreographer. And I wrote one of the actors just because I didn't know. I was like, listen, I feel like we have a good relationship. I feel like, you know, I'm an asset to the show because I know the show. I would just love to be a part of this in the next step. And then they all wrote back and they responded very positively. And they sent my information to the PSM at the time. I interviewed with her and then I got that job. So that was my first Broadway show as a PA for Lysistrata Jones.
Wow.
Yeah, just from being persistent and just not letting it go. You know what I mean? I mean, and also because... I was cherished and I was valuable and they liked me, so that helped. But yeah, that was my first show. And then things just kept moving on from there, you know. Mm-hmm. Once I got my foot in the door, I was able to meet new people and interview new people. And my name started circulating a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that kind of led to the next thing.
Now, you're right. It didn't occur to me either that a crew, I guess, like the core crew, would not travel with a show because, like, your designers, your set, you said designers.
Yeah, the designers, they were all the same. Well, yeah. Also, I mean, in that world, more often than not, I mean, sometimes designers are replaced and people are replaced all the time. It's not new, but the off-Broadway and the Broadway world aren't as connected as you would think just because mm-hmm. It's a different game, the rules on Broadway and the rules off Broadway and the way shows run on Broadway. So more often than not, general managers and directors want people with experience from working on Broadway just because it's, you know, it's more high stakes. There are union rules. There are a multitude of things that you have to learn by doing. And it's, you know, so it's just a different beast, which I recognize and know more of now. But being young and not really knowing is kind of like, wait, what? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting how many people I've talked to that have, just like that, have gotten jobs, not out of ignorance. I guess just not being aware that how the assumed things happen is not how it actually happens. So you're just like, oh, yeah, I guess I'm going to go. Well, I didn't. So let me just write them and see what's up. Like, how many other people could have had the job and just didn't think, like, well, I'm just going to write and be nice.
And also, it's just, you know... I mean, now I have the more of a mindset of this. People are going to say no all the time.
Yeah.
So, like, one no should not stop your journey. You say, someone says no, great, move on. You know, someone will eventually say yes. And you have to have that mindset of that someone will say yes, and then eventually they will, and then it keeps going, you know?
All it takes is one.
Absolutely.
Well, in high school, it was one person who said, you right. should be a stage manager.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And one trip to New York, like, this is where I want to go. And one email.
Right.
It, like, gets you Liz Estrada Jones.
Yeah.
It, you know, as a PA, nonetheless. Yeah. Not even, like.
Right.
But it gets you foot in the door.
Absolutely.
Right. That, yeah, that's incredible. Okay. So you were working as a PA, and then it's just, what is, you're saying you're interviewing with the PSM for other shows, and what is an interview like? I mean, I'm still like, the metrics, the measurement, the success, like how does one say, oh, he's a successful stage manager?
Well, I mean, success is very relative, but I will say that the interview process is very different for different shows. When I was interviewing for Cirque, their interviews are so extensive.
They're all in French.
Well, sometimes, no. But their interviews are so extensive. Like, they give you a scenario, and like, how would you respond to this? And it's always mind-blowing. So you're like, I don't know, because I'm not in that moment. So you can, like, BS an answer, but, you know, in the moment, everyone responds to something differently. And more often than not, for, like, a theater show or, like, regional Broadway, off-Broadway, there's less of those moments. And I find that it's more about personalities and seeing if you can work well on a team together, your knowledge of where you've been. Because if you're in the room, then usually you have the talent, you've worked, you have the experience. So it's more about, like, do we vibe? Can we do this show? At least that's been my experience lately. When you're younger, it's they want to know, like, where you want to go, what are your, you know, your more of your experience. But I think the older you get, it's more about personalities and how you work on a team and, you know, managing people and stuff like that.
Yeah, I hear that sometimes too. It's just the nicest person in the room sometimes gets the job.
Sometimes.
I mean, all things being equal.
Yeah.
You want to work with a nicer person.
I mean, I would 100% work with the nicer person than the jaded person with more experience, hands down.
Yeah, true. So then how did you make the transition into TV? Because I've got down here too, you were the SM for the Tony Awards this last
year. Yeah, this year, yes. And the VMAs this year.
And the VMAs.
It's been a big year for me. I got into TV with The Wiz Life. The Wiz Life was happening, and I love the show, and I was racking my brain trying to figure out how to get involved with it. And then Andrew Gottlieb, who is now a producer for NBC, he used to be a stage manager on Broadway, and he was one of the stage managers on The Wiz Live. I knew him socially. I didn't know him very well, but I knew that he was involved. And I saw that The Wiz Life was a co-production with Cirque. And at this time, I think I had done three Cirque shows or two. So I felt like that was like an in for me. You know, I come from Broadway and Cirque, and I knew the director, Kenny Leon, who was directing. So I reached out to Andrew and I was like, I don't know how any of this works. I don't know if you're hiring people. I would love to be in this room. I would love to work on this. This is where I come from, X, Y, and Z. And then, and he responded to that and we started chatting, and then a couple of months later, he invited me to join the team on the show. So,
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, it was great.
Okay, so I guess first off, I was going to ask, like, what's the difference between PSMing a live show versus a stage show? But first of all, I guess, walk me through your normal day when you're, like, for Freestyle Love Supreme, which you're currently PSM for. What's your normal day like?
Well, Freestyle Love Supreme is a unique show. It's not your typical Broadway show.
Yeah, I guess bad example.
But no. I mean, so typically we would we get to the theater about an hour and a half before the show. The actor call is usually half hour before the show, and we get there an hour before. We get there and we check in with the crew and we make sure everything's okay while they're starting to prep for the show. And then we distribute a document called the in-out to just let everyone know who's in and out of the show, like who's playing in the show that night. For Freestyle, because it's an improv show and it's never the same each night, Mackenzie Murphy, who's the assistant on the show, who's incredible, by the way, we kind of sit in the office and we figure out what the show's lineup's going to be. It's because we put new games in each night and certain members do a different feature each night, which is different from a typical Broadway show where people have their tracks. And unless someone's out, usually new people aren't going into something. Mm-hmm. But with our show, we try to keep it interesting, so we mix people up so everyone's not doing the same feature and not playing the same game, just so it's fun. So we determine that before the show, and then we redistribute that to the crew. And then the cast starts to filter in, and we check in with them and just let them know what the lineup is and handle any things that have come up from the previous show and just, you know, try to maintain, maintain what's going on in the building.
Right. That's interesting. For freestyle, I've had Chris Sullivan and Anissa.
Oh, right.
Anissa's been right where you
yes,
are.
Yes, yes, yes.
Anissa Folds on the show. And Anissa was saying that one, she found out like 5 minutes before she had to go on stage that she was doing the what's the game called where like you keep throwing words
oh,
at?
Foundations.
Yeah, Foundations.
Like that was five, me.
Five, that, yeah. I thought they set their own order.
No. I mean,
so
well,
that is you. You pulled
well,
the strings.
Well, I started with this show off. We did it off Broadway
yeah.
At Ars Nova at the beginning of the year. And they have been doing this show for, I think, 15, 18 years. They've been doing this show for a very long time. And I came into the show back then, so I didn't really know what it was. And it was very, it was an eye-opening experience. I'd never done improv. The only people I knew coming into this were Lynn and Chris Jackson, the Hamilton guys, mm-hmm. and like Tommy and all those. But I didn't know the other core group of members. So just getting to know them and figuring out the structure of the show was such a learning curve. And then I think once I figured it out, they were very happy to hand that over. So so then it just takes it out of their hands and they can just do the show and it's not as they don't have to worry about the politics of it. You know
right.
what I mean? So then it's not favoritism. It's just like, okay, tonight I'm doing this. And there are days, you know, when someone comes in and like, I'm feeling vocally tired or, you know, I'm exhausted from doing this thing all day or just like my mind isn't in, you know what I mean? So I try to structure the show to fit the needs of the cast. Obviously, I can't accommodate everybody all the time, but, you know, we try to make sure that everyone's, you know, happy and we're playing to their strengths.
All right. Pop quiz, hot shot.
Uh-oh.
Let's see. No, you said, I'm vocally tired. I can't go in. And like, we try to cater to that. Imagine if, you know, Adrienne Warren comes in. Have you seen Tina?
Oh, she's incredible.
Tina Turner?
She's yeah. incredible.
Adrienne Warren comes in. She's like,
unreal.
She's like, Cody, I'm a little vocally tired tonight. Like, can somebody else sing that one song?
Well, that's
like, you can't do that.
But that's very different. So
right.
I say freestyle is very unique. And
right,
as
right.
Very different than any other show I've ever done. And I don't mean like they're coming like, oh, I can't talk. It's, you know, like some songs, they're yelling the entire time.
Right.
And because our show is like, it's like a chess or a checkerboard, you can move people around and the integrity of the show stays the same. With something like Tina, if Adrienne can't sing a song, then she can't do her job, so she wouldn't do it. Or she would work with the music director about figuring out ways for her to navigate the song that doesn't take away from the show.
I guess that was what I was asking. Like, if you were the PSM for Tina right now, and Adrienne did come in and say like, "Oh, I'm having issues. I don't think I can sing that high note on that one song, or whatever happens." Like, how do you? Okay, if this was an interview and I was interviewing you, here's your scenario. How would you handle that?
I mean, well, it's very different because Adrienne's a beast, and I'm sure she would have muscled through it and figured out it. Anyway. No, I'm kidding. It's just you have a very real conversation with whoever's coming to you with what they have for the day. And then you talk through the show and you're like, what can you actually do? And more often than not, if a singer comes to you and they're like, I cannot sing today, then they will call themselves out of the show because no one wants to go on stage and let, you know, 1,500 people down because they're not playing to their best ability.
Mm-hmm.
And but there are some times when people just don't want to call out and you go and they go on. And then, you know, there has been times when I've been on shows where we lowered keys for people or we, you know, they just, you know, did the best they could and they got through and we moved on. You know what I mean?
So it kind of... lower a key, like...
Yeah, I mean, these people are amazing. They can...
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes, you know, we don't and they get through it the best they can.
Yeah.
But there are times, yeah, there are times when, you know, someone sings an octave lower because they can't hit the high note tonight
mm-hmm.
or they navigate a way they use their head voice instead of... You know what I mean? So we work with the music director a lot if there are vocal problems. If someone's injured, it's this kind of the same thing. We'll work with the dance captain about modifying some things. Some shows it's trickier to modify, so we encourage people to call out if they can't do their full track. Some shows, like Paramore, for instance, because we started off with that show, there weren't any swings on the show, and swings are people who, you know, get thrown on mid-show.
Mm-hmm.
Or your schedule when people are out, yada, yada, yada. So with that show, we didn't have swings to start with, so we had to create... cut tracks or create modified tracks because we had to do the show, you know. So without that luxury, you know, it's a very different beast. Most shows have swings. Almost all shows have swings. So you're able to put somebody else on when someone's injured.
And standbys.
Exactly, exactly.
And alternates.
Right. There's a list of offstage, you know, people who can.
Right. That's it's incredible to me how all the, like you said, you get there an hour and a half early. The actors get there a half hour early in most cases. That's not a lot of time to say, oh, we need to go modify this or let's go rework a track. Because the house has to open at 30 right?
We get there an hour and a half early, but sometimes like my job starts at 10 a.m. or 8 a.m. I was just doing Evita at City Center. Hmm. And it's encores, so there aren't covers because it's a quick process. We rehearsed for 10 days, and for this show, we ran for two weeks. On our final show, we had one of our tango dancers injured herself the previous night, and she was like, I can sleep it off. I'll be fine the next day. She woke up, and she couldn't put weight on her foot. I get a call from her at 8 a.m. saying, I can't walk. I need to go to the ER. So we get her in touch with the company manager. The company manager gets her there, and at that point, we have to figure out how to do the show without a swing and without, you know, because it's our last show, which was the other unfortunate thing.
Oh, no.
You know? So, like, sometimes, like, our day starts extremely early. So you start problem solving very early and you get in touch with the dance captain. Or in this case, we didn't have a dance captain. the other stage managers and I, and then with the associate director. And our director was very involved still, and so was our choreographer. So we got in touch with all of them. We started figuring out a plan of like things we can take her out of, or like things that other people could like respace or just take a certain feature away from her just in order to get through the show. So sometimes you're right, an hour and a half isn't enough. So you kind of roll with the punches and you have to start early.
For the big shows, you know, Hamilton, Dear Evan Hansen, you go in there and after the director leaves, I know the director comes back every now and then and they do a little brush up rehearsal or give some notes, but do you have like, you have all the blocking in your book, you're calling cues, you're sitting in the booth doing all that. Are you writing down like, you were five steps out wrong over here? And like, do you give notes to people afterwards?
We do. Yeah. We usually not after the show, it's usually before the show the next day. But now most of, a lot of times now, there are resident directors and choreographers who stay on with the show. So we work with them about noting the show. Sometimes they're watching the show every night. Sometimes they watch the show like maybe twice a week or whatever their contract is. They'll come in and they'll watch the show and they'll note the show. But when they're out of the building, when we're watching the show, we do, you know, we'll take notes if something's out of whack or if something felt wrong or if, you know, or people off of their marks or anything like that. So we have to be engaged and very focused throughout every show just to make sure that it's still running. And people are still feeling fresh and having fun, but also keeping the vision of what the director wanted to, you know?
Right. I mean, do you have the power to go up to someone like Casey Levy and you're like, Casey, I feel like you really just let it go. Like, you just are not in it tonight. I mean, are those the kind of things you can say?
Well, with Casey Levy, because she's amazing and I love her, like you probably could walk up to Casey and say something like that and she would laugh. Absolutely. Like once a director leaves and you're working with the associates and stuff, you kind of divide and conquer with certain notes. And if someone is not performing to the intent of what the director wanted is well within our right, as well as the associate directors, to talk with them and note them and get them back to what the director intended for the show to be.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, so there's always somebody there watching and kind of like...
Yeah, absolutely.
Keeping it. Yeah, because I feel like, especially for shows that just run for years
right.
with some of the same people, that you gotta...
Well, most of those shows like Chicago and... Lion King and Phantom, they all have resident directors because it's been there forever. So there are people who like whose job is to look after the show, and they have an office in the building, and they're always there, and they're around. And we still work with them about, you know, with notes and just uptake and scheduling and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But with most long running shows, there's a dedicated directing presence in the building, which is nice because
right.
they help alleviate some of the work, I guess. You know?
Well, okay, so speaking of the work then, you are currently PSM for Freestyle Love Supreme, but you said that you're also in rehearsal for something else.
Yes.
But then you also just mentioned that you did Evita for 2 weeks. Like, how does the scheduling work?
It's... the Like? On the schedule, for me personally, my last 3 or 4 months have been extremely busy. I'm very grateful for that, and it's just, and I've just been able to make it work. Like when I was doing Evita, I was also doing freestyle Love Supreme at night. So I would go to rehearsal from 10 to 6, and I would leave there and go to the theater from 6. Because our schedule at freestyle, we do 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock, which is crazy. So I would go there, do those shows, go to sleep, wake up, do Evita, do freestyle, go to sleep, wake up. And now I'm doing a workshop of a new musical called Limpika, directed by Rachel Chafkin. So right now we're in rehearsal, so we rehearse that, and I go do freestyle at night, and that's not unheard of. A lot of people do double duty. It's hard, but it's because it's time consuming, and you have to split your brain into two different places. But it's also fun because it's keeping you on your toes, and you get to dabble in a lot of other things. It's also exhausting, but you find time.
Right. Save that coin, man.
Listen.
Work it off while
you got bills. We got bills.
That's right. Okay. So do you jump in and out of shows, though? Or how long are your stints in the shows?
Well, that's a very right now I am with Dear Evan Hansen and with Lion King and what else? If Then and
After Midnight, Motown.
Well, After Midnight.
Kinky Boots,
well, those are different.
Ghost.
But those three, the three that I mentioned, I'm a sub for. So I go in and out when I'm in between jobs or when they needed a vacation swings or like a vacation cover or something.
Also, they're SM swings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm not full time. I have not been full time at Lion King or Dear Evan Hansen. But since those are long running shows, they're kind of like the gift that keeps on giving. So whenever I close a show or I have time off and there's a need for a sub stage manager, I just reach out to them and I'll go in to cover personal days or sick days or time off. So I'm like on call, which is very nice because it's those shows are amazing and hopefully they're not going anywhere.
Right.
As far as like, After Midnight is the only show and Freestyle will be another show or the only two shows that I've started and closed. Motown I started, but I left early to go do After Midnight. And then and the other shows, I think the longest I've been with the show has been 9 months, just because of, something else would come up. I've to do like the live TV shows, and then when I'm there, something else happens, and I move on to another show. So I guess you can say I jump around. I don't like to think of it that way, but yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Is that typical for the job, or is that typical for you?
No, I don't think it's typical for the job. I think most people, because it is not always easy finding work. I think a lot of people find a job and they're like, this is my job. I'm staying on this. Personally for me, I take it by a job basis. If the need of the show needs me to stay there, then I'll stay there. I feel like if there's a greater opportunity or another opportunity that falls into my lap, that is calling me and it's not going to affect the show that I'm leaving, then I will try to make it work to move on to the other opportunity.
So contractually, and like actors are in it for, they have year-long contracts. Is it sort of the same with ASMs and PSMs?
To a certain extent, contracts are all very different. Most principals are signed for a year, and then a lot of the ensemble are signed for like a 6-month rider, and then they can renew. Mm-hmm. And then they're on like either an open-ended contract or they keep signing a new rider. For stage managers, sometimes you can sign a term contract. If they really want to, you sign on for a year or you sign up for 2 years. Most stage managers don't sign on for a term. Most of our contracts, we sign on with the ability to have a 4-week out, just because of It's just kind of how our contracts usually work. But sometimes general managers or producers will ask that you commit to a year. And then you see that through, or if you can't, then you will approach that and figure out, what the options are.
More problem solving.
Exactly, exactly. Yep.
Okay, so I have a Patreon account, and so patrons of a certain level can ask their own questions.
Oh, okay.
So I got a patron question here. Your Twitter account is very theater-focused, more behind the scenes, while your Instagram account is very full of hot, muscular, lifestyle types of photos. So why the difference, and what message are you trying to convey with each account?
Well, my Twitter account, I hop on there maybe once every year. Like, I'm barely on Twitter. I get on Twitter and I'll like repost something or I'll talk about a show or something. Instagram is kind of, I find it to be more of a free for all. I like to share pictures of my life. It's more of like a personal journey, I guess, less about my work. I don't know. I'm not really trying to convey. I don't know. That's funny. But thank you. I'm very single if you, I'm kidding. No, my Instagram is just pictures of me and like my life and, you know.
Well, okay. So what's your sexual orientation?
I am gay.
Okay. So Byron Jennings is a friend of mine, longtime listener. And I think you and he would get along very well. I'm just saying.
Well, there you go.
Shout out to Byron. Hey, Byron. So here we go. Matchmaker. Anyway.
Listen.
Yeah, so I actually wanted to ask you about being gay on Instagram. It's very, like a very lifestyle oriented, like we were talking about. And is it important for you to share that side of yourself in a public way like that? Because you've got a lot of followers now.
Well, I actually just spoke about this I was speaking at a college, and I was talking to people about social media, and because a lot of teachers of the older generation speaks highly on like how you present yourself on social media, because people will look at you a certain way, and I just said you have to just be honest. If you present yourself in a way that is authentically you, it doesn't matter how other people are perceiving it, because people are going to perceive you however they want to. Personally, for me, being, you know, a young Black man from Houston, a small town in Texas, and moving to New York City and accomplishing what I have without knowing how to do it, I think it's very important for me to highlight that for other people. I think it's also important for me to live my life authentically within doing that. And that's what I try to convey. Like, I don't really worry about if I post a picture of me in a Speedo on the beach, how people are going to take it, because you know what I mean? It's I'm not, you know, it's, my work is my work and my life outside of that is my life outside of that. And also just like to spread joy. Like, most 95% of the time, everything I post has a tone of joy, because that's just how I operate. I like to be happy, you know, so I like to share that, you know, and I think that people need that, you know.
Exactly. Well, Freestyle Love Supreme is wearing off on you, because it's all about living your truth.
Absolutely.
Spreading joy.
Yeah, and it's kind of the perfect show for me.
Having each other's back.
Yes.
That's a great show. Okay, so there are three standard closing questions that I ask everybody to wrap up every episode. The first one, very simply, is what motivates you?
What motivates me? My friends motivate me a hell of a lot. I have a lot of friends, but I have a great circle of friends, and we check in on each other all the time. And even when we're not working, or even when like we're feeling down, someone always can sense it, and they always check in. And like, and that sense of brotherhood and sisterhood and like communion motivates me to continue to just to go, you know?
That. Next question is, what advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now, starting out down a similar path?
The first thing I would say to people, and I know people say this all the time, and I think that we cannot ever not say it enough, is that who you are is enough. Just being yourself in a room, walking into a room, and not trying to be someone else or trying to appease someone by, you know, dressing a certain way or talking a certain way, but just walking in and owning who you are, I think that goes a long way. And that's a lesson that I didn't learn up until maybe a couple years ago. I'm 31, you know what I mean? And that leads to the second thing, everybody's journey is different. You realize things at a certain time, you get the dream job at a different time than your best friend or your colleague or your, you know what I mean? So just trusting the journey, being yourself, and living authentically.
All right.
Yeah.
So last question. This is the hardest one.
Oh, Lord.
If you could only see one show for the rest of your life, but you can see it as many times as you want, what show would you see?
Oh, that's hard. Yikes. Is that running right now?
No, any show.
Oh, God. I would probably say... Oh, this is hard. This is so hard. I was going to say Aida because I'm obsessed with Heather Headley and I want to just see her perform that all the time. But I probably would have to say Dreamgirls. Ooh. 1,000%. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a beautiful show. That cowbell at the beginning. Come on. You laugh, you cry, you go on a journey. It's amazing.
Oh, I love it. All right. So we can find you on Instagram, at Twitter, at Cody Renard. Anywhere else that you want to plug?
No, that's it.
All right. All I got. So you can get me at thetheaterpodcast.com. Support and get your questions in for my guests at thetheaterpodcast.com/Patreon. I'm on Instagram and Twitter, theater_podcast. You can listen, leave a rating, leave a review. I love to read those. This is edited by Matthew Hendershot. Thank you to Jukebox the Ghost for the intro and outro music. And Cody, thank you most of all. This has been wonderful.
Thank you.
Take a deep breath, make the world a little colorful.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.